Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from the Dark Side of Wikipedia. If you like this show and you also like the paranormal, then be sure to check out my other podcast, The Grave Talks, with new episodes every single Monday and Tuesday. Just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts. Here's a 15-minute preview of a recent episode of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, Ronald Doe, the true story of The Exorcist, a conversation with Jeff Belanger. When your boy starts hearing scratching on his walls and then begins to see strange scratches on his body, it's reasonable to be concerned as a parent. The scratches begin to escalate to words and messages. It takes concern to fear. When the boy's voice, personality, and entire demeanor seem to turn to evil, it calls for an exorcism. That is the story of Roland Doe, the inspiration for The Exorcist. Today we discuss the true story of Roland Doe and The Exorcist. What happened, and has anyone ever discovered the true identity of Roland? Jeff Belanger gives us the answers to these and many other questions today on The Grave Talks.
So it started long ago on a TV show called Ghost Adventures. And way back on episode 100, which seemed like quite the milestone at the time, but that was more than 100 episodes ago, we decided we were going to do the Exorcist House in St. Louis, Missouri. So that was the time. I mean, you know, when you're into the paranormal, first of all, like, you can't help but sort of know something about this story. You know, I've seen the movie. You kind of know, like, it's based on a true story and so on.
Sure.
So we're doing the Exorcist House for episode 100. And I start to dig in. And the thing about research is, you know, once you go down the rabbit hole, you can just keep going. And I was blown away. There was just so much to this story, so many facets to it. Most of it, nothing like the movie, but in some ways, even scarier than the movie. I mean, you know, and so that's how it all started for me was Ghost Adventures years ago. And then the Shock Docs started coming out, and I've been fortunate to be a part of several of those. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I love when the paranormal, like, kind of bleeds into popular culture and, mm-hmm. and back and forth and just makes for a new story.
Sure. So when you started to dig into it, how surprised were you, or were you surprised of the differences between reality and what kind of the lore had been in the public from the Exorcist movie and really, you know, the bits and pieces that had kind of leaked out over the years about the story itself?
Oh, Tony, this is going to be hard. There's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I want to give you good answers, and yet I'm so scattered, right? So can we just kind of, like, spitball here for a minute?
Yeah.
Is that cool? So I'm having a vision of being in Ed and Lorraine Warren's kitchen mm-hmm. in Monroe, Connecticut. I was probably in my early 20s doing a story on them for a local newspaper. I grew up in the next town. And their phone would ring all the time. This was before the internet. Their phone number was listed and everybody knew them. So mm-hmm. their phone just rang all day. Lorraine Warren would pick up the phone and say, I just hear one side of it. Hello? Uh-huh. Oh, honey, that sounds bad. Is there a Ouija board in the house? Oh, honey, did you see the movie The Exorcist? Yeah, you got to get rid of the Ouija board, honey. Okay. Yeah, okay. Bye-bye. Right? Like that phone call just played over and over and over.
Yeah.
So you had the Warrens saying, don't ever touch Ouija boards. And their evidence was the movie, The Exorcist. Not even the book, but the movie, The Exorcist.
Yeah.
So there's that part of it. And then having done stories on, like I interviewed George Lutz of the Amityville House. Mm-hmm. And I remember that movie based on a true story.
Sure.
And you're like, well, in Amityville to the Lutz family. Sure. And that's about where it ends, mm-hmm. you know? And then when you hear the real story, you realize Hollywood blows things out to, like, amazing proportions.
Sure.
And I sort of get it, right? I mean, if you're trying to make a scary movie, you need to be compelling and action packed and scary most of the time. Otherwise, fans of that genre are just going to walk out. Mm-hmm. So I already have a pretty good understanding that when you see a movie from Hollywood that says based on a true story, I mean, expect very, very little by way of fact.
Sure.
So that's me. I'm ruined. I was ruined long ago. So yeah, when you asked that question, was I surprised? No. I've seen what happens.
and let's dive into the real story of what actually happened here. Take us back to the very beginning of this story where you have this boy, there's concern, there's something not right. The family doesn't know quite what to do. Pick it up from there. How did their struggle begin and where does it go at the very, very start of this?
Right. So the actual story all begins January 15th, 1949. Unless your listeners think that I have an incredible photographic memory. I'm cheating. I have notes. I printed them out. Because I want to get it right.
Sure.
I think it's sort of important.
Yeah.
So January 15th, 1949, Cottage City, Maryland is where this all begins. And a boy named Roland Doe, Doe being the anonymous last name, like Jane Doe, John Doe, but Roland, in his grandmother's bedroom. And the boy and his grandma heard some scratching noises on the wall. And they say a picture of Jesus that was on the wall shook as if something on the other side kind of like banged against it. And the scratching noises continued for days. Now, the thing about Roland's aunt is she was a spiritualist. And, you know, she probably did use a Ouija board with Roland along the way and probably had discussions about spiritualism and spirit contact. Aunt Tilly was her name. And she died just a couple weeks later after the scratching began, January 26, 1949. Died in her home in Richmond Heights, Missouri, by the way.
Oh, wow.
And she died from multiple sclerosis, and she was only 54 years of age. So that's sort of like the earliest sort of setup inkling that something could get going. But then, just days after her death back in Maryland, the noises start up back in Roland's house in Maryland, right? So, and this time it's in the boy's downstairs bedroom. And everybody heard it. Everybody hears what sounds like marching feet coming toward the boy's bed. And everybody's a little bit freaked out. And then finally, Roland's mother, who thought like, oh, that's Aunt Tilly, says, if you're Aunt Tilly, knock three times. And then they hear the knocks on the wall. And so it's sort of established that they think, oh, this is Aunt Tilly coming back to visit. You know, she just passed away. And this is certainly within the realm of her belief. And here she is. And so from there, things kind of start to escalate. People get scared. And that's what happens with these cases, right? And again, flashing back to things that like Ed Warren would say, how the first stage is always like there's got to be some sort of invitation. There's got to be some sort of entree into the world of the living. And this would be it. You must be Aunt Tilly. And we do that, right? We try to establish some sort of name on something we don't understand and can't understand. And then we feel better. Sure. You know, we have no idea. Three knocks? Really? That's Aunt Tilly's distinct three knocks?
Yeah.
You know?
It must be safe then. Yeah.
Must be safe, you know? No one in my family has a distinct knock that I would say, like, oh, that's clearly grandma, you know? But
our knocking code with our family members. We all have.
That's right. Yeah. But that's what happens, right? We do what we got to do. We got to do something to feel safe. So so as the things start to escalate, they're getting nervous. And you're like, well, Aunt Tilly wouldn't really attack Roland, right? She wouldn't torment him all night long, not let him sleep. That doesn't sound like something a nice auntie would do. So eventually, Roland's mother has him spend the night at a Lutheran minister's parsonage because she believes whatever this is not totally safe. Probably not Aunt Tilly anymore. Now it's just sort of plaguing this boy. So spends the night at this parsonage where he can hopefully get some rest. But while he's there, the minister observes that Roland is like shaking in bed and the minister's hearing scratching noises. And then the chair near the bed allegedly tips over by itself. And at this point, it's becoming clear like it has nothing to do with the house. It has everything to do with Roland. And that's a cause for concern for everybody, because it's one thing if I can just get you out of the house, right? Get you someplace safe. But there is no place safe. You are the problem. And that's and then things just continue to escalate from there.
So they're having all these problems and you have the minister that is, yeah, this is not good. What did they do? Does that minister, does he think that he can handle this? Is this above his head or what are they doing? Because they know they have a problem, but still no solution.
So the thing with Lutherans is that they don't really corner the market on exorcism, right?
No, they don't.
It's not their thing. And that's okay. Like, they're more about saying blessings and let's, you know, do this and that, and God should take care of it. And I'm sure in some cases that's enough, but in other cases it isn't. So Roland is escalating to the point where he's being scratched by unseen forces, and eventually the word Louis, L-O-U-I-S, appeared in scratches on his stomach. And Roland's mother was from St. Louis in Missouri, so she takes this to mean that we must have to get our son to Missouri, try to get him to escape whatever paranormal forces are plaguing him in Maryland. And so she asks, you know, how long we should go there, and then 3.5 weeks appear in scratches, and so now that's enough, right? Roland's getting brought to St. Louis to stay at his Catholic aunt and uncle's house in the Belle Noir section of the city. Now, I've been to the house. It's just this unassuming little brick house, you know, in a neighborhood. You would drive right by it. You wouldn't look twice at it, but that's where family lived, so that's where he stayed. But things only get worse in St. Louis. It's like this battle is just beginning. And the other thing that's worth pointing out is this is all happening within, like, 2 months of Aunt Tilly's death. So this is going from, like, knocks and scratches on the wall to, like, words being spelled out in scratches in under 2 months. And that's really quick. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's really a cause for concern. So while he's there, now his aunt and uncle are going to take this from a Catholic perspective, because that's what you do. You know, I mean, you deal with the toolbox you have.
Sure.
And so they reach out to their clergy, and the clergy comes out, and they said they suspect something diabolical. And I love that word, right? Diabolical possession. Like, that's a specific term. It's not just a colorful one.
Yeah.
It's alleging that demons are involved. Mm-hmm. And that's when things just continue to get worse. I mean, and so at night, things don't let up for him. The mattress moves up and down. It shakes. The scratching noises are heard constantly. Priests come in. They splash holy water. And the boy reacts violently, like he's being burned. And Roland's just screaming in pain. And meanwhile, zigzag patterns are being scratched onto his stomach. And eventually, more priests bless the house. And they're sort of moving it up the chain. You know, in the Catholic Church, you can't just go knock on the door and ask for an exorcism. I've tried. Just out of curiosity. They usually just slam the door in your face. I was raised Catholic, by the way.
Yeah.
Full disclosure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I did the whole thing, right? I all the way up through confirmation. And so I know people. Well, I know people who know people.
Sure. I mean, let's pause this for a second there. I mean, if somebody, you know, is suspecting this, I know it's not an easy process, but, like, if you just go to your local Catholic, you know, priest and mm-hmm. said, I'm interested in an exorcism, I think we maybe should do something. Do local priests, even in many cases, have any idea where to take that request, or are they just kind of encouraged to try and calm it down on their own before even going anywhere beyond it?
Okay, here's a high level. If you went today, yeah. today in 2021, you went and knocked on the priest door, assuming, by the way, that you go to church, sure. and go to that priest church, and he knows you, mm-hmm. and he knows that, you know, you give regularly in the old collection basket. You would say, I think something's wrong with a family member. I'm really concerned. I have a fear that this could be something like demonic. That priest would probably come out and say some sort of blessing, check it out for himself. If he has any suspicion at all that this could really be something more than just, hey, over-medicated, under-medicated, or some other sort of issue, that priest would report into the diocese. Every church belongs to a diocese. So you report to the diocese and say, hey, I would like to start an investigation. Every diocese has an investigator, and you don't necessarily know who that is. It could be a priest at a whole other church who then comes in and then is going to do a medical, you know, get a medical professional involved, a psychiatric professional involved, and do his own theological investigation. Mm-hmm. At that point, if they suspect that, no, this is truly something beyond medical or psychological, then it gets passed up to the bishop, the archbishop, and then eventually to Rome, who assigns an exorcist who comes in from somewhere in the world to start the process of exorcism. It's not a one and done, right? It's not like an appendicitis where you get your appendix removed, it's gone, and off you go.
Yeah.
So then that's the formula. And the point, by the way, they would tell you is that a priest, your local priest, doesn't stand a chance against a demon. But because the Catholic Church goes through this whole involved process, then it's the whole of the church against the demon, not just your local priest. It's the whole church all the way up to Rome standing locked arm in unison against this demon, and that has a good chance. That's their argument with the way they sort of do these things.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's two brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.